Louis Burkin, the peer of France, the humble Christian, and the zealous evangelist, was burned. His light had shone brightly, but only very briefly, in his native land. When the martyr went up in the chariot, which was unseen by the crowd, waiting to carry him to the sky, his mantle fell on one who was standing near. For the providence of God had brought the young evangelist, John Calvin, that way. And he received a double portion of Burkin's spirit to take up the work of him who had fallen and to spread throughout not only his native country of France, but throughout the world, that truth which lived when Burkin died. You may remember that Calvin was in Paris because Calvin's father had died, and he had to leave where he was to travel to his hometown of Noyon, and his way carried him through Paris right at the time when the great martyr was being burned at the stake. Well, behind him was the stake of Burkin, in whose ashes so many hopes lay buried. Before him was the home of his childhood, where no father waited to welcome him, while all around in the horizon of France, the clouds were rolling up and giving a very certain augury that the Reformation was not to have such a prosperous future in that country as it was enjoying in Germany and in Switzerland. But God, Calvin tells us, comforted him by his word as he walked toward his boyhood home. Well, Calvin had left his home when he was just a little lad. He was, at that time, a pale-faced youth with a burning eye. And he returned much more grown up, but with that same pale face and a burning eye. As yet, he had not yet thought of leaving the Church of Rome. He desired to cleanse and to strengthen the old fabric by proclaiming the truth within it. But it's interesting. His experience in his own hometown doubtless helped to show him that the tottering structure would fall to pieces in his hands if he attempted restoration of it. Well, it is most interesting that there was a great Roman Catholic official in Paris at that time when Calvin had made his way home. That man was a man who was in charge of the penances for his country. And Dr. Merlin was his name. And he had accompanied Burkin to the stake, and he watched him die. And he wrote in his history that for 100 years, there had not died a better Christian than Burkin in that country. And the same historian told us that on that very night of Burkin's martyrdom, there was a terrible frost that caused the wheat to be stunned. And there followed a great famine and plague in that country. Well, back to Calvin and to Noyon. The fame of the young scholar had reached his hometown, and many of his companions wanted to hear him preach. And some of the people of the region were half suspicious that he was a heretic. The rumor had come around, and it only whetted their eagerness to hear him the more. So the church, where he had grown up, was open to him. The day came, and quite a crowd made up of his own and his father's acquaintances and people from the neighboring towns filled the church, eager to see and to hear this young man. Calvin expounded to them the scriptures. The old doctrine was new under that roof and to those ears. The different feelings awakened by the sermon was evident on the faces of those that were gathered in that congregation. Some beamed with delight, as do those of thirsty men when they drink and are refreshed. This select number embraced the leading men of the district, among whom were Nicholas Picot. On that day, he tasted the true bread and never again turned to the husk of Rome. But the faces of the most part expressed either indifference or anger. Instead of salvation from sin, they preferred what the church offered, a salvation in sin. And as regarded the priestly portion of the audience, they understood but too surely what the preacher's doctrine tended to do, to overthrow the church's authority and the drying up of her vast revenues. Many a rich abbacy and broadacre, as well as ghostly assumption, would have to be renounced if Calvin's doctrine should be embraced. Noyon had given a reformer to Christendom, but she refused to accept him herself. The congregation was a fair specimen of the universal Romish community, and the result of the sermon must have gone far to convince the preacher that the first effect of the publication of the truth within the pale of the church would not be re-edification, but the demolition of the old fabric, and that his ultimate aim must point to the rearing up of a new edifice. After 2 months' stay, Calvin left his home, and he left that city. And after days, that community that he left behind in Noyon was ashamed that they had given birth to that very infamous name of Calvin. Calvin had to choose anew his field of labor. He decided in favor of Paris. For in Paris at that time, the king was again gathering around him many intellectuals. The king, Francis, was not bowing to the Reformation, but he was bowing to the Renaissance. And he did not give great backing to the Protestants, one of whom was his sister Marguerite of Valois, nor did he back the monks. He liked to see the monks stirred up by the intellectuals. So Calvin understood that there was a time there for the gospel during that great ferment at that moment among the students at the university. Their study in Hebrew and Greek had led them to the Bible itself. Its simplicity and its sublimity had charms for many who did not relish its holiness. For many who did not care for the doctrines of Scripture, yet they drew from it an illumination of the intellect, even when they failed to obtain the renovation of heart. A little proud, it may be, of their skill in the new learning, and not unwilling to display their debating tact when they were ready for battle with the champions of the old orthodoxy, wherever they met them, whether in the court of the university or in the street, the students were ready to debate regarding the new faith. In fact, the capital was then ringing with a warfare, partly literary, partly theological. And Calvin found he had done well, instead of going elsewhere, of gathering up this spot for his labors, where the fields seemed to be rapidly ripening unto harvest.